ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts. Alyssa Roenick, we last saw Mikaela Shiffrin when she was at the center of the Beijing Olympics in February. She was projected to get more gold medals than any American skier ever. And that infamously, of course, did not happen. So I just want you to take us to the top of the mountain here, to the alpine skiing course in Beijing, where one of the best skiers we've ever seen was just sitting there silent. What was going on in Mikaela Shiffrin's head?
She was trying to figure out how to disappear. This was now two races into the Beijing Olympics. She was, as you said, expected to win. This was the slalom. This is an event she is incredibly accomplished at, and she had skied out for the second time in 3 days, meaning she missed a gate, skied off the course, and we're talking 5 seconds into the course. And that means she's effectively DNF'd. She's out of the race. And she needed a moment. She skied over the off to the side of the course by the fence and sat down and put her head between her knees. And in her mind at the beginning of this, she thought she was sort of disappearing. The other athletes coming down the course couldn't see her. She was actually afraid if she were to stand up and ski to the bottom, that she might interrupt them. But what she didn't realize at the time, and she came to realize several minutes into this, was that this was being projected to the world. And the cameras remained on her for a very, very long time.
Right.
She wanted to just melt under the fence and disappear. And she was also trying to make sense of it. She knew what awaited her when she got to the bottom was cameras and questions. She didn't know why this had happened. It had happened so few times in her career. And here now it had happened twice in 3 days, in two races.
I mean, Alyssa, so a DNF, it did not finish. I mean, this is in some ways way more worrisome than just losing, right? To be very blunt about this. And this camera shot, I remember watching this, it was like viscerally uncomfortable to watch it almost, because this was not the first big miss that she had had on the Olympic stage.
Right. So the day, 2 days earlier, she had skied out in the giant slalom. And so to see it happen twice, I mean, the last time she had skied out in back-to-back events happened in her rookie season in 2011. No one saw that coming, including Mikaela.
And so she's sitting there and she's alone and she wants to melt under the fence, as you said. What ultimately gets her to start moving?
You know, the opening line of my story sort of got to that. Her butt was cold. She was sitting in snow. She was at a point you just have to get your butt up off the ice, right? And she had this really sort of beautiful thought. It was also a brilliant reminder that she's 27. And a scene from Frozen 2. And I think Kristen Bell plays a character named Anna.
Yes.
And this song came into her mind. And there's this song where she sings, "Just do the next right thing."
Then I'll make the choice to hear that voice and do the next right thing.
And that was the thought, was you don't get to crawl into a black hole. You don't get to melt under the fence. You have to do the next right thing. And so she thought, what is the next right thing? Well, the next right thing isn't what happens tomorrow. It isn't the next race. It isn't going back to the World Cup. The next right thing was to stand up, ski down to the bottom, and try to talk through this in front of the cameras.
Just skiing past all the coaches standing on the side of the hill and all the photographers, and they're just like taking pictures of me like skiing, sliding down the side of the slope. I'm like, this is just the greatest walk of shame you could possibly do. And let me tell you, I did it 3 times.
And she goes and takes questions. And I remember this part too, Alyssa, just what it took to clearly, in this incredibly, incredibly lonely and lost moment, to actually get in front of cameras and talk to everyone about what's going through your mind.
And I just didn't react quick enough or whatever it was, but I don't know. I wasn't going to try to get to the finish today and, like, slide my way down to the finish. I wanted to ski just a good run of slalom. And I don't know. I feel like a joke, but yeah. Maybe it made someone smile.
How would you describe what that sounded like to you?
I haven't heard anyone use the term lonely, but that's exactly the word. And we're in the middle of the pandemic Olympics where there's, you know, such a distance. She's wearing a mask. She's 6 feet from the journalist who's interviewing her. There's no one around in the finish area. And so it was really lonely. But in some ways, it was cathartic for her. And in some ways, it was incredibly painful. It was really remarkable to watch. It was heartbreaking to watch as well.
Medals and... oh, man, I don't know if anybody's failed that hard with so many opportunities, maybe in the history of the Olympics, but I'll take it. I mean, it is a joke. It's just, that's fine. I just really selfishly wanted to have a good run of slalom down this hill, and I'll be left wanting there.
You know, I think it all culminated in both her sitting on the snow that day and in her standing in front of the cameras that day and understanding she is more than Michaela Schifrin, you know, two-time gold medalist and world champion and an overall World Cup champion, that she's just more than a ski racer. And she's becoming less afraid to let people see that.
To see Michaela Schifrin in action is to see a person launching herself down an icy mountain, risking her life at unreasonable speeds in pursuit of fractions of a second. And arguably no woman in skiing history has ever been better at it than her. So today, Alyssa Roenick takes us behind the scenes to explain what really happened to Michaela Schifrin during that sudden run of not just Olympic failures, but disqualifications. And how seemingly inexplicable failure was exactly the thing she needed to set her free. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, May 17th. This is ESPN Daily. So, Alyssa, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, but let's be honest here, in sports, the business we work in, it feels like mental health awareness is this perpetually recurring storyline, especially lately, because we're hearing elite athletes talk about this stuff in ways that I don't remember, not with this sort of a frequency. So there's this thematic timeliness to why we're talking today, but I'm also curious why you, at this moment in time, specifically wanted to write about Michaela Schifrin.
Well, Michaela and I started working on a story back around November, December, which was when the first of our interviews took place. And mental health was on her mind. The first thing she said in one of our first interviews was, there isn't a day that goes by where really big topics like social justice and mental health aren't at the forefront of my brain. And I want to talk about them now. I want to talk about something other than ski racing. And I want to do that in interviews. And then it just became very clear she was elevating the conversation around mental health and athletes in the same way so many athletes had before her. Let's make this a story that gets the attention it deserves around Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yeah, listen, normally when we say that we're working on a profile of an athlete and the athlete has a public disaster, it's sort of the worst news. So I actually just want to rewind a second here and just have you explain, what were the thoughts and expectations for what you would have seen from her going into Beijing?
And so there was the expectation was that she was going to be Michaela Schifrin, right? This woman who shows up and wins nearly every time she clicks into skis. I mean, she'd been to two Olympics beforehand and she left each one with a gold medal, right? So she's already on the list of the most decorated Olympians in alpine skiing history.
Yes.
And so that was the expectation, that she was going to compete in every single event. You know, only a handful of skiers have ever done that. You're just going to come here and be that woman who's able to focus and compartmentalize and push all the rest of it out and ski faster than everyone else.
Yeah, just be Michael Phelps is all she needed to do, right? Win a billion gold medals.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, and but don't do it while you're underwater and able to like actually block out the noise, right? Do it while you're traveling 80 plus miles an hour down an icy course that no one had seen before because, of course, none of the athletes had trained in Beijing. There was all the added stresses of COVID and the protocols. Michaela tends to stay with her family and coaches away from the athlete village. That wasn't allowed. It was a really emotionally difficult Olympics for everyone. And here she's going to try and do something no one's ever done before in the middle of it all.
I have questions about just who becomes an Olympic skier, Alyssa, to be honest with you here, right? Because she, as you say, is just 27 years old. And her childhood, how does one get into this sport in the first place and get noticed?
Well, you could say she was born into it. Both of her parents were accomplished ski racers. And they brought that love to their children. And so from a very young age, her parents put her and her brother on skis. And you know, everyone you talk to who was around Michaela when she was young on skis has stories about her being different. The hours she would spend working on one technique. She's always been focused and driven and meticulous in a way that other kids her age weren't. And what that led to was her at a very young age being phenomenal.
Will it be Hansdotter's first win here in Ora tonight? No, it's Shiffrin's maiden victory. Hansdotter celebrates.
She joined the World Cup Tour full time in 2011. She was 16 years old. And for many years, she was the youngest to do this, the youngest to win nationals in slalom, the youngest to do this, the youngest to do this.
Well, you do not get more drama than that. At the World Cup Finals, 18-year-old Michaela Shiffrin doing the impossible, winning the World Cup slalom title.
And what that has led to is now at 27, she is arguably a couple years from being the, on paper, the greatest to ever wear skis, the greatest alpine skier. She's, you know, not too far off from Vaughn and Ingemar Stenmark's all-time records.
Adrift, Michaela Shiffrin, her fourth overall title, clinched two races shy of the end of the World Cup season.
So the mentality, Alyssa, that this sort of specific risk-seeking kind of a sport requires, I mean, how would you describe the psychology of Michaela even early on then?
Well, it's such a good question because this gets brought up a lot because she does not fit that box well. I've had this conversation a few times because really, someone who thinks too much, that tends to be a detriment standing at the top of especially, say, a downhill course, right?
Right, right.
She's a really intelligent woman who spends a lot of time thinking deeply. This is a woman who's, you know, her brother said, you know, dad would have us read Proust and Plato and sit around the table and discuss, you know, big philosophical ideas. And she spends a lot of time thinking outside of herself and thinking about how to fix the world and, you know, make her sport and the world at large better.
The idea of, hey, here's a sport where you go 100 miles an hour, upwards of that, downhill on skis. The sport you're talking about is crazy to me. And the idea also of being a perfectionist with that as the context for what you're supposed to be doing, when does Michaela's perfectionism and her relationship with that concept, when does that first become really visible, would you say?
It's a really good question. I think publicly, it was at the Pyeongchang Olympics in 2018 in South Korea. She comes into Pyeongchang and wins the GS, goes to the medal ceremony that night, and then has to be back and ski in her signature event, the slalom, the next morning. And of course, she's expected to win that as well, but she gets fourth. She finishes just off the podium by like 0.08 of a second. And instead of feeling accomplished and successful, she really felt like a failure. And part of that was because she was opening social media and people were supporting that idea. They were calling her a failure. She said that day felt like the worst it could get, both in how she felt about herself and also in the way that people could treat her and view her on social media. And she'd won a gold medal the night before.
You're literally a gold medalist. You have lots of positivity coming your way, but trying to be perfect in everything leads you to dwell on the failure, on the feedback that is very unhealthily negative. And as she's trying to navigate all of this, where is her family fitting into this dynamic?
Well, they are right there with her. And so, like I said, before Beijing, she tended to travel and stay with her family, with her coaches. So you have her mother, Eileen, and her father, Jeff, who on and off traveled with her, acted as coaches, and her brother. And, you know, they were always there to give her some perspective. You know, dad took care of all the logistics, everything from flights to, hotel arrangements and finances, and always had his camera around his neck. She always says he didn't document moments, he documented emotions. And her father was the kind of guy who would hide wisdom in a funny comment. On that day, you know, he said to her, "Michaela, don't let the turkeys get you down." But as she became more famous and more followed, she felt like people expected, even in defeat, for Michaela Schifrin to be happy-go-lucky and silly and smiley, and that, you know, 16-year-old with the bouncy curls. So she really started to split herself into two. She was a real honest person, a flawed human when she was with the people closest to her. But she curated very thoughtfully her social media into this just very fun, filtered escape for her fans.
Yeah, it's a familiar, carefully reinforced sort of a split, Alyssa, between personal and private. But after the break, I want to talk about the tragedy that forced that framework to change.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So Michaela Schifrin, Alyssa, has been basically compartmentalizing her deeper thoughts, her real feelings about her life, about the world, by just keeping them to her family inside of her inner circle, an inner circle which works together, which lives together, with Michaela actually moving into a new house with her parents in early 2020. And likewise, by the way, on social media and competitions where she's just dominant, she's just all public-facing positivity all of the time. But one day in February 2020, Alyssa, what happens?
She is in Italy between races with her mom doing a photo shoot. It was a cover shoot for Sports Illustrated, and the cover line was "The World's Most Dominant Athlete." And when she arrived back at the hotel, her brother, Taylor, called from Denver and said, "I need to talk to mom." And she said, "Talk to me." He said, "I don't want to talk to you. I need to talk to mom." And you know, she said sort of in that moment, she knew something was very wrong. And so she took the phone and handed it to her mom and just immediately saw the look on her mother's face and broke down. They found out that her dad, Jeff, had an accident at their family home. He had fallen and he had a head injury and they didn't know how bad it was. And they immediately started booking flights. And she says the last thing the doctors at the hospital told her and her mother was, "We will do our best to keep him alive until you arrive." And they did arrive in time, and she was by his side when he died that day. He was 65.
And again, this is 2020. The pandemic is also unfolding simultaneously. How does she grieve this? How does she react to this?
It's so hard to imagine any more of a distinct sort of cutting in half. When she says she looks at her life, there's just this divide, right? You are at the top of the hill and then boom, the next morning you're just at the bottom of it. She just kept thinking that, you know, she'd had this perfect childhood and this incredible life, and the best years at 24 years old, the best years of my life were behind me, which was by far one of the most painful things she said. And she just sort of crawled inside of herself. She's like, I didn't want to sleep. I didn't want to eat. I definitely did not want to ever put skis on again. And the people around her told me, you know, they all had conversations and they said, if she never puts a pair of skis on again, we will understand that. You know, skiing was a Schifrin family event. Her dad was such a part of all of it. And if it is too painful for her to ski again, she will have had one of the greatest careers. And at 24, if she walks away from this, no one will argue with her. And again, you know, that idea, just do the next right thing. And then in March, about a month after her father's death, she and her mother flew to Sweden for a parallel slalom race. And the race was scheduled, I believe, for March 12th, 2020. And as you can imagine, about 24 hours before the race, it was canceled and the world shut down, and she returned home that day. But when she got home, you know, she was both now a woman who was suffering and in pain and being shut out from the world. And in some ways that was difficult, but in other ways, she says it was sort of a gift.
And she seemed to explain more of what she meant by that, Alyssa, in a few voice memos that she taped for you during your reporting.
For me, I felt like it was almost giving us a grace period. Like the isolation, normally I think it would not be great in that situation, but for us, my mom and I were together. My brother was really close by. We could still see each other.
They were all suffering through the same loss and grief and just trying to logistically figure out how to get their lives in order in a world where their dad was gone.
The first year, especially the first 6 months, was so much about trying to pick up the pieces so that we could actually just keep life going and like paying the bills and learning the finances and changing accounts over so that we could actually use our credit cards and all of these things that like changing, learning a system and then recreating the system so that it worked for us when my dad wasn't there to manage it all anymore.
So Michaela Schifrin, Alyssa, is stepping up to figure out how to keep the family business going at the same time that she's processing what clearly felt to her like the end of her world. And as all of that is happening in 2020, it also feels like her public-facing self, what she is now willing to reveal, that's also starting to evolve.
You know, she said she'd always felt very fearful of speaking her opinion on something without being an expert on it, right? Which that would preclude most of us from having opinions on just about everything, but it doesn't seem to do that for most people. But for Michaela, she really cared about, I don't want to push my opinion on someone. I also don't want to speak out of line. I don't want to be not liked. I don't want to upset anyone. She had all of these fears about the way her opinion would impact someone else. And then she is at home, going through incredible grief, spending a lot of time thinking about grief and loss in general and how all people are affected by such things and how the pandemic is affecting people, and looks around and realizes we're all in the midst of a summer of social justice movement and a conversation around racial inequity. And she said she finally realized that I don't have to be an expert, but the fact that I'm not speaking up, the fact that I'm not saying something is just as wrong. And I don't want to get it wrong, but I don't want to not say something for fear of getting it wrong. And so she wrote about a 1,000-word Instagram post. And, you know, she was fearful in hitting send. And one of the things she said was, not only was I afraid of the people who follow me who might disagree with my point of view, but I was also afraid of negatively impacting someone who would feel that perhaps I'm co-opting their lived, very real experience and not just speaking out of a need to keep a conversation around inequality going.
And she tries, Alyssa, right? I mean, she starts posting about George Floyd in May 2020 after his murder. And then in June, and this is presumably in response to the comments that sort of flooded her page, after that, she posts the more than 1,000 words that you alluded to. And a big part of that, because I went back and read this, a big part of that is just about how upset she used to get when something she said or did would lose her followers, because to her, social media had been this sort of a scoring system, like it's its own Olympic sport, actually, and that her whole goal this entire time was just to do whatever would get more likes and followers and approval from the judges in the comment section, about how she is so classy and nice and how she's being a good girl.
And so she spent weeks before she hit send on this post. And immediately she realized that the hateful messages she got from taking fourth in Pyeongchang had nothing on the responses she got to this post. But the thing she realized was the fear was gone. This was her speaking with her humanity. And she then wrote a second post about an hour later, and the tone of it could not be more different. It is angry and urgent, and it opens saying, "You want to unfollow me? I'll see you to the door." And it just completely changed the way she started interacting online. She started really opening up about her father's death and the grief around it, and also her opinions on bigger things. And she would engage in conversations with people, both on over DM and just in the comments. That moment really changed the Michaela Schifrin she allowed people to see. And she stopped trying to be the Michaela Schifrin she thought they wanted, and she just started being herself.
All right, Alyssa, after the break, there is one other big name and another Olympic disappointment that might be able to help us better understand Michaela Schifrin, and that's Simone Biles.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way, or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Alyssa, we're talking here about Michaela Schifrin, who just lost her chance at gold in the 2022 Olympics, skiing out just a few seconds into the course in Beijing, as we discussed at the top of the show. And it was this inexplicable inability to do a very basic thing that she had mastered as well as anyone we had ever seen. And hearing you talk about all of this, I cannot help but think of what happened to another Olympian we've discussed with you on this show. And that obviously is the story of Simone Biles.
It sounds eerily similar, right? And we talked a lot about Simone Biles and her experience in Tokyo and how that had affected Michaela. She talked with such empathy about what Simone had gone through But she had a hard time seeing herself in Biles. You know, she talks about Simone being, you know, my goodness, she's the greatest to ever do her sport and the expectations she's going to win, you know, X number of medals and, you know, she's going to do things no one's ever done before. And she's also has all these heavy things going on in her life. And there was a moment where I was like, it sounds like someone else.
And, right.
And she would sort of, you know, laugh that part off.
I guess when I was watching Simone, I was pretty defensive about her. I remember somebody asked me in the gym because, you know, I'd go to the gym every day and they'd have the Olympics on. And somebody asked me, you know, what do you think about all of this Simone stuff? And it's like, you're going to have to be a little more specific. And he's just like, well, you know, I just was wondering, like, just kind of not really saying what he thought, but sort of making it was a tone. I was just like, I don't think you get to make a judgment on that.
And, you know, her coach said something to me that has stuck with me. Did we learn enough from Simone Biles to avoid the outcome Michaela had at the Winter Olympics? Mm. And then he said, clearly not.
You're allowed to have an opinion. So there's nothing wrong with that. It's just trying to be a little bit kinder when you're speaking to the athlete, because at the end of the day, that the way people communicate with each other, it ruins lives, for sure. And it ruins careers. And sometimes it ruins careers that you hoped were going to continue a little bit longer.
It sounds like it is undeniable that there is a connection there in the way that there was with Simone Biles.
You know, skiing doesn't have a term for the twisties. And in gymnastics, you know, what that term essentially means is a loss of spatial awareness, a loss of the thing your body knows how to do and your brain knows how to do to know where you are in space when you are doing inverted or upside down twisting maneuvers, hence the twisties. And if you've lost that mind-body connection, it's impossible to believe that doesn't have something to do with what is going on in the deepest recesses of your mind. And so even though skiing doesn't have a term for it, they were very similar events, because the thing that Michaela Schifrin knows how to do better than anyone, which is ski fast down a slalom course, she said, I felt calm. I felt ready. For the first 5-6 gates, it felt perfect. And then her body just wasn't doing the thing it knows how to do and that her brain knows how to do. And so it's hard not to make a very clear connection between all that was going on in the minds of these two women, all of the pressure, all of the external things they were dealing with outside of, they were pushing down and pushing down. You know, they're still going on back there and somewhere in their minds, right? Incredible similarities between what these two women went through.
And so, Michaela Schifrin, how is she taking care of that part of her career, the mental part now? What's her approach?
I'm going to channel Michaela for a second. I think the first thing she would say is, I'm still figuring that part out. But she started last year working with a sports psychologist to help her refine that focus she was so famous for. She started working with a grief counselor, and that's something she wanted to do, but also understood the time commitment and the amount of work it would take was tough to do while she was also staring down an Olympics. And so she's working through more, clearly working through the grief of losing her father. And she's also learning to allow herself to be joyful. You know, and her brother said this very emotional thing to me. You know, he said, I see my sister struggling to allow herself to smile and be joyful in a world without my dad. And I say to her, he's with you. In those moments when you're sitting on the side of a slalom course and you get back up and you ski down, that moment, he is with you because he taught you the resilience that it takes to do that. And when you win a downhill, he's with you there because he taught you how to refocus your goals and take your failures and carry them with you and and refocus on the next thing. And he's also with you in the joyful moments because he was funny and silly and would tell you not to let the turkeys get you down. And so instead of thinking about making memories without him, just think about the way he's with you in every memory that you make from here on out.
At the end here, Alyssa, as we sort of widen the aperture out to involve like everyone listening, the two of us talking here, and our relationship with this story and with mental health, I gotta say, I do find it reassuring, honestly, that Michaela Schifrin, maybe the greatest to ever do the thing that she was doing, felt like she was so lost that she couldn't and was hurting so much that she couldn't be herself and then wound up finding herself again. And the same with Simone Biles. I mean, these are these stories that sort of tell us about the outer limits of human achievement, but also kind of also about normal everyday people too. And I'm wondering if you also had that experience reporting this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something we all can relate to. I think there's a version of the twisties in all professions, in all sports. And the thing that's changed is the conversation, is the fact that Simone and Michaela and athletes like Naomi Osaka and Michael Phelps and Lindsey Vonn are not just experiencing these things, but they're talking about them publicly and sharing this part of themselves and sharing how they're working through grief and pressure and struggle and mental health issues is something that allows us all to do the same thing. And I think that's such a good lesson for all of us.
Alyssa Roenick, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you as always. This has been a pleasure, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.